Welcome in, sports fans. It's the Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass. We are halfway through the work week, and we've got a lot to talk about on today's show, so let's get right into it now. We'll start with the NBA playoffs, as last night, the Boston Celtics just absolutely dominate the Cavs, 120-95. Cavs continue to struggle on the road in the postseason so far. Again, remember, every game they lost in that previous series against the Orlando Magic, they lost on the road in Orlando. So definitely Cleveland has been a safe haven for them so far in the playoffs. But last night, another tough outing for the Cavs. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Derek White, all big for the Celtics in that game. Jason Tatum with the double-double with 18 points, 11 rebounds. Jaylen Brown had 32 points. Derek White had 7 threes and 25 points overall. Just a barrage of three-point shooting in favor of the Celtics in that game, really kind of helping them over Cleveland. And Cleveland, early on, they were able to keep up with the three-point shooting of Boston, but as the game got later and later, we saw them kind of start to struggle. Almost kind of the opposite of what we saw for the Cavs in Game 7 against Orlando just a couple of days ago on Sunday, where they kind of struggled early on and then picked it up and got hot in the second half. It's kind of the opposite of this. The Celtics had a 15-point lead heading into the final quarter. And another big game for Donovan Mitchell for the Cavs. He had 33 points and 6 assists. Look, he played as good as you could want him to play, but Boston just too good. And I think you got to look at Boston right now. They've got to be the odds-on favorite, not only to win the Eastern Conference Finals, but to win the NBA Finals as well. They are a dangerous team when they are playing well, and they are playing really well right now. So definitely going to keep an eye on this series. Hopefully Cleveland can match it up and make it a little bit more of a series and bounce back from game one. But we talked about on yesterday's Glass Half Full that Cleveland's a little tired. They're a little kind of limping into this game, if you will, against the Boston team who has had a couple of days extra rest, but is also, like I said, playing really good basketball right now. Oklahoma City, they take down the Dallas Mavericks in game one of that series, 117-95. Luka Doncic struggled, man, at least in the sense of him struggling. He struggled. He had 19 points, but I think the biggest thing was he did not protect the basketball. 5 turnovers in that game. You've got to play better if you are going to be the big guy for the Mavs. You've got to play better. You've got to be that anchor for them moving forward. But it's just game one. Still a lot of basketball left to play in that series. But you look at Oklahoma City, they have been sharp so far in this postseason. They've won 5 games in a row. Obviously, the 4-game sweep over New Orleans and now winning game one. So Oklahoma City still has yet to lose in the postseason so far. Some tough news for another team in the postseason. The New York Knicks are going to be without center Mitchell Robinson. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with an ankle injury. So 6 to 8 weeks pretty much eliminates him from the playoffs altogether, right? Even if they make it to the NBA Finals, he's still not really going to be healthy enough to play and make an impact in the NBA Finals. So it's the third key front court player for the Knicks to go down in the playoffs. So definitely for them, they have been trying to stay healthy, but it has not been successful. And you hate to see it for the Knicks because we've talked about it before. If there was a team that could rival the Celtics in the eastern side of the NBA playoffs, it would be the Knicks. And they just can't stay healthy so far in the postseason, and that's really hurt them. But they do have a 1-0 series lead over Indiana right now. We'll see how that plays out as they continue to play on through that series. Staying in the NBA, Rudy Gobert has been named Defensive Player of the Year, the great player for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I want to say he's won it like 3 or 4 other times. This is not his first Defensive Player of the Year. He won it in, I believe, 18, 19, and then again, I think like 21 or 22, something like that. So he's definitely a guy that's known for his defensive prowess. But lately, the conversation with him has been about how he missed Game 2. Now, why did he miss Game 2? Well, if you're not an NBA fan and you're not following the NBA postseason, then you won't know that he missed Game 2 because his wife was going into labor. So his wife was going into labor with one of their children, and he said, you know what, I'm going to go be with my wife. And it's brought a little flack towards him because of that. I don't get it. I don't understand it. His wife was going into labor. They were having a baby. That is not just like a little easy little, you know, thing. That's a big deal. Even if you've done it before and you've got three other kids or however many kids they have, it's still a big thing when your wife goes into labor and she's delivering a baby. So for Gilbert Arenas to come out and be like, "Ah, well, you know, that baby will be there when you get back. Go play the game." Some things are bigger than basketball. I get it. You love the game. You want to play the game. But at the end of the day, some things are bigger than basketball. Some things are bigger than your job. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do for a living. Your wife goes into labor. You should probably make a phone call and call into your job and not go into work that day. Right? Like that seems like something to where you go, all right, I need to check my priorities here. Oh, wait, yeah, my priority is with my wife as she is pushing a human being outside of her body. So I don't understand Gilbert Arenas kind of essentially trashing Rudy Gobert for being there with his wife as she's delivering their child. Yes, he does have a point. The kid would be there. The baby would be there when he gets back. But it's not just about the baby. It's about showing support to your wife. It's about being there to support her through the process, right? It's being her teammate. You want to put it in sports terms? You got to be a teammate to your wife in that process, in that time period, as she's going through this and having this happen. You got to be a teammate. So this is just Rudy Gobert being a good teammate. And I don't, Gilbert Arenas, I get it. You know, again, yeah, you're playing for an NBA championship, but it is just game two of the series. And oh, by the way, it was a series that his team had a 1-0 lead in, now a 2-0 lead in. Didn't really seem like they needed him the other night. Won that game pretty handily. So I say let's back off of Rudy Gobert. I think he did the right thing by not going to game two and going to be by his wife's side as she was giving birth. Talked about this yesterday. Was wondering what we would see play out from this. We now have our answer. Jamal Murray, again, if you haven't been following the NBA playoffs, Jamal Murray on Monday night in the game between the Denver Nuggets and the Minnesota Timberwolves got a little frustrated. There was a couple of bad calls, or at least in his mind, some bad calls before this happened. So there was some frustration that had been building throughout the game for Jamal, and it kind of capsized when there was a play that Jamal necessarily wasn't thrilled about. He was sitting on the bench at the time, had a towel and a heating pad in his lap, and he just takes the heating pad and tosses it onto the court in the direction of the official. I'm not going to say he threw it at the official. I will say he threw it in the direction of the official. Like there were multiple people around and it seemingly went in one particular direction towards this one particular person. So you can read into that what you will. But again, it was one of those situations where nothing happened to him in the game. There was no technical foul called. He wasn't ejected, anything like that. And the official talked about it after the game because somebody asked him in an interview and he talked about it after the game, said, well, we didn't really see it until it was too late. And we felt like by that point in time, there wasn't really anything we could do punishment wise to Jamal Murray, so we just let it ride. Well, the NBA said, yeah, we can still do something. We can still do something. And a lot of people were talking about, would it be a suspension? If it's suspension, is it a half? Is it a full game? Is it two games? How much do you suspend him? It's actually not a suspension. They are actually going to fine him $100,000. $100,000 fine from the NBA towards Jamal Murray for throwing that at an official on the court during game two. So he's not going to have to miss any playing time. He is going to have to take a chunk out of his bank account, though, and give $100,000 back to the NBA. And look, already, even if the NBA didn't punish him in any way, you've got to do a better job if you're Jamal Murray or anybody else, especially on that Denver Nuggets team. You've got to control your emotions. You got to have a more sound mind on the court. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to get ticked off at stuff, whether it's a call that's made that you think is a bad call, whether it's a no call that's made where you feel like there should have been a call made. You're going to get irritated and frustrated at stuff. But in the postseason, especially anytime, but really especially in the postseason, you have to keep your head on your shoulders. Because him doing this, could have gotten him suspended for the rest of the series. And right now, being down 0-2 in the series, Denver needs Jamal Murray to play in this series. The last thing they need is for him to be suspended for three games, because then by then the season or the series and the season for them could be over. So he's got to do a better job of keeping his head on his shoulders, especially now, because if you don't think the league and the officials are going to be watching him under a microscope for the rest of this series, one slight move in the wrong direction, one slight little extra word to the official, oh, it's going to be watched and it's going to be critiqued, and people are going to be paying more attention to him than ever before because of this. So if now, more than ever, he has got to keep a cool head on his shoulder, and his teammates have to look out for him. They have to keep an eye on him, and if he starts getting a little frustrated, they have to pull him to the side and say, hey, man, take a couple of deep breaths, get you a drink of Gatorade, do some Wusaba or whatever you need to do, that stuff that, you know, Jack Nicholson told Adam Sandler to do in anger management. Goosefraba, I think is what it was. Do that. Sing I Am Pretty like they do in that movie. And just relax. Because if you do something boneheaded again, you're out of this game. You're probably out of the series. And we're probably done for the year. We need you. You've got to be smart. His teammates have got to look out for him. And really, honestly, by looking out for him, look out for the team as well, because, like I said, the Denver Nuggets are going to need Jamal Murray. So no suspension for him, just a $100,000 fine. It's still a lot of money. Somebody else that's in hot water, but this is in the NFL, Kansas City Chiefs receiver Rashee Rice. Man, you talk about things getting worse. Rashee Rice already facing charges of one count of collision involving serious bodily harm, six counts collision including injury, and one count of aggravated assault for that accident he had a couple of months ago. Now over the weekend, police are called to a nightclub that Rashee Rice is at, and he is now a suspect in an alleged assault case that sent a man to the hospital. No life-threatening injuries, thankfully. Just some swelling on the face from probably getting popped a couple of good times by an NFL player. Allegedly, of course. But still, this is not good. You've got to think, look, Andy Reid is a no-tolerance guy, right? Andy Reid may tolerate Travis Kelce or one of his other players getting emotional during a game, and there may be some back and forth between them. He'll tolerate that stuff. But this type of stuff off the field, Andy Reid will not tolerate. So if Rashee Rice wants any type of future career inside the NFL, if he hasn't already ruined that, somebody's got to help him, man. Somebody in his corner's got to get him under control, man. He's had this car accident, now this alleged assault in a nightclub in Dallas. Somebody's got to go to him and be like, man, do you enjoy playing in the NFL? Because if you keep acting like this, you're not going to be playing in the NFL. Because Andy Reid's not going to tolerate this stuff. And no other team will touch you with a 10-foot pole if you're constantly getting in trouble with the cops, because they don't want that publicity for their organization. So somebody's got to kind of help Rashee Rice steer away from all of this trouble he's getting himself into the last few months and kind of refocus and get back into a good spot where he can go out there and maybe get ready to play some football again. I don't know. Right now, with these two things he's facing, with the one count of collision involving seriously bodily harm, one count of aggravated assault, six counts of collision involving injury. That's some serious stuff to be sticking against you. Now, as of right now, there's no charges being pressed by the guy that he allegedly assaulted in this nightclub in Dallas. So maybe this guy realizes that he was in the wrong, maybe running his mouth, spouting off to Rashee Rice, and Rashee Rice gave him a couple of 1-2 combinations and shut him up. Maybe that's what happened. We don't really know fully what happened in this story. But still, Rashee Rice has got to have somebody in his camp that pulls him off to the side and says, hey, man, let's do better. If you want to keep playing in the NFL, you have got to do better. And it's as simple as that. You've got to learn how to distance yourself from those situations that are only going to hurt you, right? It's only going to hurt you. Yes, people, the guy had a couple of bruises and got punched, and some people got injured in the accident. I'm not trying to downplay any of that. But for Rashee Rice, from a football standpoint, yeah, he's got to have somebody that's going to steer him clear of that stuff, because he's proven the last few months he can't do it on his own. And that's the truth. More NFL news. Joe Burrow looks like he's getting back into the swing of things after that wrist injury a season ago. He's been doing some throwing at Bengals camp. Looks pretty good. Getting out there, throwing around with some of those young weapons he has there in Cincinnati. So we'll see how Joe Burrow's season can turn out. I mean, look, last time Joe Burrow played a healthy season for the Cincinnati Bengals was that the year that they played the Rams in the Super Bowl. Yeah, and the Rams beat them. So I think if Joe Burrow can stay healthy for the Bengals, they've got the sky's the limit for them, right? They've got the talent, offense, defense. They've got what it takes to be a winning football team. They've just got to make sure that their quarterback stays healthy. And wasn't able to do that a couple of seasons, and you saw how it went for them during those years without him. So definitely need him to stay healthy and under center. Tua, another guy, got to stay healthy if the Miami Dolphins want any shot of not getting back to the postseason, but actually getting that monkey off their back and getting a win in the postseason, right? I feel like that's the next step for them. I know a lot of Dolphin fans are going to be like, no, we want to win a Super Bowl. Well, it's a process. It's baby steps. You've got to the postseason. Now you got to go win a game in the postseason, right? And I think they made a move. And the reason I haven't mentioned this before on the podcast is because I wanted to wait to make sure that it was official and make sure that the ink was on the paper before we talked about it. That has now happened. They announced it today officially with him signing the contract. So it looks like Odell Beckham Jr. is now going to be a Miami Dolphin, which should help Tua as far as his weapons go. And I know, look, there's going to be a lot of conversations of, is Odell Beckham Jr. still the receiver that we once thought he was or we once saw him as? And the answer to that is, I don't know. We'll find out. I think this is probably the most talented team he's been a part of since he was with the Rams and they won a Super Bowl and he got hurt in said Super Bowl. So I think, I mean, if you look at Odell Beckham Jr., I mean, the guy, his first seven seasons in the league, six of those years, he had over 1,000 yards receiving, right? He was on pace to be that next big name receiver in the NFL, right? He was on pace to have those, you know, Jerry Rice type numbers where it was almost 1,000 yards receiving every single year. And then he leaves the Giants, goes to Cleveland. And just like anybody else or anything else that goes to Cleveland, your productivity drops. Look, I mean, it's the truth. You go to a team like Cleveland who offensively struggles, or at the time offensively struggled. You're also playing with a guy like Jarvis Landry in Cleveland who's going to take some of your catches. Yeah, his numbers are going to drop off drastically, and that's exactly what we saw in his time at Cleveland. But he leaves Cleveland, goes to the Rams. Maybe didn't have the same success statistically that he had his first two seasons in New York with the Giants, but he was still a crucial part of that Rams Super Bowl run and was a big part of why they had success early on in that game until he got hurt, until he tears that ACL in the middle of the Super Bowl. So I think, you know, he's got something to offer the Miami Dolphins. He doesn't have to be the guy. And I think that's why this is an enticing place and one of the reasons why he wanted to go to Miami. And I think it's why it's a great fit for Miami, because he doesn't have to be number one, right? Miami's already got Tyreek Hill. They've already got Jalen Waddle. For the first time in his career, Odell Beckham Jr. can be wide receiver three and just line up and run routes. He doesn't have to worry about being the guy that team relies on to be their go-to weapon, because the Miami Dolphins already have two other go-to weapons. Now you can keep Braxton Berrios on special teams, have him as your kick returner and your punt returner, because you are going to need somebody that is quick, shifty, and elusive, especially with the new kickoff rules that we have in the NFL now, with them going more along the lines of what we see in the XFL with kickoffs. More along the lines of that is what we're going to be seeing in the NFL. So I think having Braxton Berrios as a guy who can focus more on special teams, that's going to help the Dolphins out. And then also having a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., who is, if he's still got the speed he had early in his career, if he's still got the hands he had early in his career, is going to be a more than capable wide receiver three for the Miami Dolphins. And you've got multiple looks that you can give. You can put any of your big three, whether it's OBJ, whether it's Tyreek, or whether it's Waddle, you can put any three of them in the slot. You can put them out wide. You can bring them into the backfield. You can do just about anything with those guys. It is going to open up the Miami Dolphins offense. It's going to make them a lot more versatile, and I think it's going to make them a lot more dangerous as far as it goes, because defenses are going to have to play a little bit more honest now. Now that you have a guy like OBJ out there on the field, like I said, if he does provide the productivity that the Dolphins expect him to and that he expects to, the defenses that the Dolphins face will have to play a little bit more honest, right? They can't, and I've talked about this before. We talked about this when on the very first episode of Glass Half Full, when we were talking about the NFL draft, and I talked about how I thought the Dolphins should have actually drafted Ricky Pearsall. And it's because they needed that guy that could help the defense stay honest. They needed that third receiver that could bring an actual serious threat to opposing defenses. And that's what they now have with OBJ. They got that guy that can bring that threat. And what's going to happen now, and what we saw last year, was last year, especially if Tyreek Hill wasn't healthy or Jalen Waddle wasn't healthy, if they were banged up a little bit, the defenses would focus on covering the other one, shut them down, say, okay, beat us with a banged-up receiver and Braxton Berrios. Well, now you look at the passing game for Miami. You can't do that if you're the opposing defense. You can't say, all right, we're going to shut down Tyreek Hill, because what's going to happen? Odell Beckham Jr. and Jalen Waddle will make you pay. Those are caliber players that will make you pay. So now defenses have to play more honest, more regular. They can't just focus on one guy. You can't double team one guy, because if you double team Tyreek, if you double team Jalen, then one of the other two guys is going to burn you. So you've got to play up, you've got to play honest, and that's actually going to open up opportunities for guys like Achane in the run game. So I think by adding Odell Beckham Jr., a lot of people are looking at this and going, oh, well, it's going to help the passing game. Yeah, it's going to help the passing game, but it's going to help the offense in general. Because having a guy like that just on the field, just his presence on the field, is really going to open up some things for the Miami Dolphins moving forward on the offensive side of the ball. Locally, I just want to give a quick shout out here before we head out. Baseball for UWF, the Argos baseball team, taking home that Gulf South Conference Championship for the second straight season. That is a fantastic program. Love going and watching them play over there at Jim Spooner Field on the campus of UWF. So congratulations to them once again on winning the Gulf South Conference. We will continue to keep an eye on them as they make a run for a potential national championship. And exciting times. It's always exciting times when you talk about UWF athletics. I mean, right? It's another championship to put into the closet there as this team just can, in this program. As far as athletics go for UWF, just continue to roll through. I mean, seriously, I don't know of any program in the state of Florida, no matter what level of college athletics, that has had the success that UWF has had, whether it's baseball, softball, basketball, football. I mean, it has been incredible, and it's always fun to watch. It's always fun to go and cover. So, again, congratulations, UWF baseball, winning the Gulf South Conference Championship, again, for the second straight year in a row. Go Argos. Love to hear that. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Have a great Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow.